Well, happy holidays, everybody. It's time for Twitten, a special holiday episode. We had so much fun a couple of years ago during a New Year's Eve show, bringing some of our hosts from different shows together, as they never do appear during the year, and we thought we'd do it again. So joining me, Denise Howell from This Week in Law, Steve Gibson from Security Now, Renee Ritchie from Mac Break Weekly, and what we're going to do is look back at the year 2016, the highs, the lows, the big tech stories. It's a very special Twit. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 594, recorded Thursday, December 1st, 2016, for air on Christmas 2016. What a year. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twit2. It's time for Twit, a special holiday edition. Hello, everybody. This is the Twit for Christmas Day, December 25th, 2016. We are not recording this. I did not make anybody work on the holiday. So we recorded this earlier in the month, but we're festive. I've got Santa coming out of my head. Or is that an elf? I don't know what that is. To my right, Steve Gibson has joined us.
Nice to see you.
So what we used to do is we used to have people come in and we'd all get drunk. And then I thought we should do what we did. Remember this? How many years ago was this?
It was 2015.
For New Year's Eve, you, Randall Schwartz, Renee, you were there. Yep. Renee Ritchie was also there from Highmore.
Jeff Jarvis
was there.
Right.
And I was not.
No, you. I think you. Because
I was taking a break,
a much deserved break.
I was exhausted.
Everything is being aired live, and it was just a spontaneous discussion.
So you know who is missing from that one is this person right here, Denise Howell from This Week in Law. Nice
Hello.
To see you.
Great
it was totally
to be
illegal.
Here,
so this is the beginning of a new tradition. We want to bring everybody up. We'll rotate shows, obviously, but we'll bring hosts from other shows in because usually you don't get to talk to each other,
right?
And it's kind of nice. You guys had breakfast together?
We did. We hung out all morning.
Totally secure.
Totally secure. Do you lock you down?
No, I got breakfast.
It was a squirrel code to get your breakfast, but after that,
some guy with a mask walked up and had been listening to our entire conversation for several hours.
Really?
And he had several critiques of some of the.
That's a little scary. Are you kidding?
No.
That's a little weird.
He was charming.
Yes, he was.
And he said he corrected you?
He didn't stay long.
Yeah.
No, I think he agreed with us.
No, he said he'd been using Mac since before it was doomed, and he was happy to hear us talking about technology.
My goodness.
So what we're going to do, Tanya and Karsten, our production team, has put together a list of some of the big stories from 2016. And I hope you will all, you know, because each of you has your own beat. You've got security. Denise has law, and Renee has the Mac. Come up with stories that you thought were important also this year. What do we think was the big story? I think I know what the big story of 2016 was. It was the election. And while that's a political story, it was very much, I think, also a technology story, with Facebook and Twitter particularly were really used to great effect by the candidates.
Right.
By one candidate.
Well, Steve and I talked about that this morning. It was an amazing social engineering attack, like just from a pure technical point of view.
Of course, Trump's use of Twitter was very effective. I mean, he continues to use it.
And the traditional
media.
But
also, the big story, that we talked a lot about was fake news on Facebook. I've been one of the people who's not too worried about that and doesn't think we should censor news. Because what is fake news after all, right? I mean, it's
who decides?
Who decides that? But more to the point, I think the dark advertising that we've been learning about, that Trump's team, led by Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, was able to use a company called Cambridge Analytica out of the UK to profile 220 million Facebook users in the US. And in particular, using Facebook quizzes to more than just,
engage.
To gauge sentiment. Yep. So, and then could target ads, not just ads for people who would potentially be voting for President-elect Trump, but also for people who'd be voting for Hillary Clinton or the others, they could they were using it to suppress voting. Like, oh, it won't matter, don't vote.
Text in your vote.
Yeah, text in your vote. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. And I think back to, I'm old enough to remember, and you might be too, Steve, when Richard Nixon won the presidency in 1968.
Oh, I do.
And everybody said, this is the first time ad men have been brought in to run a campaign.
Yep.
And I think fast forward now to 2016, this is
operating procedure.
This is more than ads now, though. This is the very effective use of social media in a way that we will probably see from now on, mm-hmm. right? So I'm going to nominate that for my biggest story. What do you think the biggest story was, Steve?
Well, I agree that in general in our world, this crazy election dominated a lot of our time and thinking.
Yeah.
And of course, to a somewhat lesser degree, this whole question of can a private email server be secure is something that we talked about. And unfortunately, or for good or bad, it did factor heavily into forming a lot of people's opinions about security and trustworthiness and so forth. And so that was leveraged to great effect. And I said on a number of times on our podcast that without knowing anything about the technology, as they say, the devil is in the details. And so to make any kind of an actual judgment about the security of a piece of technology, you have to know everything about it. And none of the rest of the world outside of some inner circle had any details. But what we did hear was that at one point, at least, while the server was in use, it was physically insecure. It was in a small ISP's office building where you could not guarantee physical security.
Somebody could walk in the door. Yeah.
And that was my point, is if you don't at least have physical security, right. you can't have data security. So
this is also the third year of the Snowden era.
Yes. And good point. Everything has changed. I mean, we're seeing the ongoing effects of the revelations that he woke us up to.
Right.
And as I've said also on the podcast, independent of how you feel about him, was he a traitor? Was he a patriot? The question I've posed is, can you imagine an alternate timeline where he didn't do this, where we didn't know today what we now know, if we were as ignorant of what was really going on? And so I think knowledge is better than ignorance, independent of that. And what we've seen is we've gone from a world where you would create a secure connection to a server only briefly to send your credit card information or your login credentials over. Then it would drop you back to HTTP for your regular interaction with the server. The problem is, as the Fire Sheep hack showed, it was trivial to hijack somebody's logon session and just to watch their traffic. That's what we knew that the NSA was doing, because at the beginning of this, most of the traffic, only brief little pieces, were encrypted and could not be easily seen.
Denise, what do you think the legal story of 2016 was?
It was probably the dispute over whether the FBI could compel Apple.
San Bernardino.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that speaks to a larger story of 2016 being the year that people, that not just we geeky people, but ordinary people started to realize that their data on all of these devices is not just unique to themselves, that it's very readily available to whether it's the government, and we can wrangle over what circumstances that happens in, or advertisers or other corporate interests who are leveraging that data, not necessarily to everybody's benefit.
I think
society's getting that now.
Weeks talking about Apple versus the FBI. Yeah.
Could you imagine a future where your phone enjoys privilege the way your spouse does, because it starts to contain more?
It can't testify against you.
Yeah, it knows more personal information about you than a spouse does.
Well, but isn't that what the court debate over fingerprint versus password is? you can't be compelled to give your password because that would be self-incriminating.
Testimony.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Testimonial.
But your fingerprint, like your hair or your DNA or an actual fingerprint, is not.
That's right. It's not actually any sort of knowledge in your head.
Is that holding strong?
It's split.
I thought there were some decisions recently that went the other way.
There have been. And the courts have wrestled with this over the years. We've had courts in different parts of the country say that passwords could be compelled,
right.
That fingerprints could be compelled. I don't think that, by and large, I mean, to have a takeaway for our listeners and viewers, by and large, the password is going to be the way to go if you're trying
to. Didn't they have one where they said that they couldn't make you tell them your password, but they could give you your phone and you had to enter it and then give them back the phone?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
well, there have been a lot of weird decisions.
In October, there was the big story where this actually Forbes found a May filing. The Department of Justice sought a warrant that would compel everybody in a building to hand over their fingerprint. Yeah.
Right. This was down in Southern California, actually. And we don't know much about it at all because it was all under seal. So kudos to Thomas Fox Brewster at Forbes, who you know, he and his minions unearthed the fact that this had even happened.
But, kind of an amazing story.
Yeah.
But it's not passwords. It's still fingerprints. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But to get a warrant, and it's kind of a fishing expedition, right?
Yeah.
To walk in and say, everybody in this building, on these premises, must give us their fingerprint.
Well, they knew the IP, but not the individual using the device, right? It was a mobile device from that IP.
One of those John Doe warrants that we hate.
Right,
so
and it's going to vary from judge to judge. You know, judges are still the people who decide whether search warrants should issue. And unfortunately, you know, there's no uniformity between them. Some of them are going to grant warrants that seem desperately overbroad, and some of them are going to be more circumspect about it. So it comes down to, you know, who the judges are in our country.
Well,
is an important thing.
And I guess in the case of compelling a password, if the individual refuses, and we've seen instances, for example, where hard drives have been encrypted, and the individual makes the decision that, you know, I'll be in worse shape if they see inside this hard drive than if I refuse. And so they're then in contempt of court, and they're put in jail until they produce the evidence which the judge is compelling them to produce.
It's no question in my mind that the hackers gained ground in 2016. But I wonder if it's safe to say that the government also gained ground in 2016. For instance, you know, we're recording this early in December. Early in December, Congress neglected to stop a rule that would allow law enforcement to hack computers. Any magistrate in any jurisdiction could give law enforcement a warrant to hack computers in any other jurisdiction,
right,
in the pursuit of a crime. And this was much battled, but it went through. So, well, I guess what happened is they weren't able to to say stop. Because otherwise,
unfortunately, while they're paralyzed, everyone else is still moving.
Yeah.
This is really frightening that it happened this way as an administrative amendment to the rules of criminal procedure rather than any kind of law that had to be passed.
I mean, I might argue on the other side of it, which is that technology has outpaced this notion that you'd get a warrant in the district of the crime because of and particularly with hacking, there is no jurisdiction.
Right. We've broken those borders.
Right. So I think you could make the argument that this Rule 41 kind of had to be changed for the 21st century.
Right. But the other component of it where judges can issue warrants now that allow basically the government to hack computers of unidentified people. I don't know how you show probable cause if you're entering machines where you don't even know you're not disclosing who the individual is.
Yeah, that may be one of the most shameful stories of 2016, that the FBI was running more than half of all the child porn sites at one point in the United States as honey pots for pederasts. That baffles me that the FBI was doing that and was allowed to do that. According to one researcher, the FBI was likely running about half of all the child porn sites at one point on the internet.
As a sting.
I mean, I guess you
as a sting.
Catch a lot of criminals that way.
No. Well, they had a major bust, I think, last week. They took down a huge ring.
That was the playpen bust, yeah. I think, yeah. So government has gained ground. They gained ground in the UK this year, the Snoopers Charter.
Just recently,
passed. Theresa May, who had proposed that before she was prime minister 3 years ago, had been fighting to get that through. Now that she was prime minister, she was able to get the votes. And that passed in the UK, giving, according to Edward Snowden, the most broad powers to a non-autocratic government ever. Extreme surveillance, Cory Doctorow called it.
V for Vendetta.
And I imagine, remember the 5th of November. I imagine that the same thing will happen in other Western nations, including perhaps here. We did talk a little bit, though, and I'm not clear on this, and we'll have to get back to you on how it affects encryption. It seems that it might mandate backdoors in encryption, but I'm not sure. I don't see that explicitly in the Snoopers Charter.
Yeah, it's not clear how this is going to get implemented. I mean, there was one of the reasons that this recent presidential election was important was we know that the next president was going to be appointing or nominating for appointment at least several Supreme Court justices over the course of the probable tenure, and that as we're seeing now, the Supreme Court has become more and more involved in figuring out where these lines are. And
I understand. I mean, times change.
Yeah.
Technology was not envisioned by the founding fathers.
Nope. And we're trying to, interpret this constitutional document, which, knows about grain.
Right.
And, but doesn't speak of the problems that we have today
directly.
At least
directly. In the UK, they're making it laws. They're not doing it illegally.
And that's one of the justifications for this, isn't it? Well, it's now explicit.
Yeah. And at least a law you can challenge and can be overturned. Right. But when you're doing it illegally, then there's no recourse.
Well, and secretly.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
That was why our Patriot Act was so controversial, is that one of the things we learned was that things were being done under those guidelines, under that legislation, that the people who established it didn't ever intend. It was pushed quietly and secretly. And then all of the letters which companies are receiving –
The national
security letters, again, under the cloak of, we're asking for this and you can't tell anybody. So now we have warrant canaries all over the place that are,
We used to have them. They're all gone now.
That's right. In fact, they have all disappeared. We know now that they
sort
were
sort of
asked.
Sad if yours are still up. Is that what
nobody wanted your data. So I agree with you, Denise, that the one of the very biggest stories was Apple versus the FBI. Now that the smoke is clear, the FBI dropped the case. They said, we found a way to get in, which was a little disturbing. Now that the smoke is clear, what is the upshot of that case? Is the FBI just waiting for it appeared the FBI was waiting for the kind of perfect conditions to pursue this. Apple took an unprecedentedly strong and I think principled stand against it. But in the long run, if the courts rule against Apple, Apple is going to have to do if it wants to do business in the U.S. what the courts say. So now as we look back, was that just a tempest in a teapot, or is this the beginning of a first skirmish in a long war?
I think it's a skirmish, and I think that Apple drew a line in the sand, and that there has been a political shift in the country toward helping law enforcement get.
Yep, it was controversial then, and I think you're right; it's less controversial now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Companies, it's going to be incumbent on customers and companies to make it really clear what sort of services they demand and expect. And if the government says, sorry, encryption is just a deal breaker for us because we can't do law enforcement anymore, things are going to come to a head.
Well, and we have this notion of things being normalized, too. We're hearing the word normalized a lot in our jargon. And the idea that this was a big issue this year. It won't be such a big issue in the future. I mean, the social side will adapt to this and
the new normal.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's a consensus, though, among the American people that we want to err on the side of security,
So I'm interested in what happens next.
That's
so
going
to
happen,
let's
right?
say this goes through and they are forced to put backdoors in, and then inevitably hackers discover them and suddenly millions of people have their bank accounts.
Is it the American... That was Tim Cook's...
Yeah, but I mean, let's say that happens. I mean, that's going to be the...
Is it the American people, though? Or is this being...
I think it's the American people. I think most people... In fact, we've seen this worldwide, this kind of move towards authoritarianism.
Yeah.
That when you get really scared, you let the strong man in and say, protect us. And I think that's kind of what this is.
Yeah. Statistics about people who didn't mind military government anymore were mind-boggling. They thought it was not a bad idea.
I just saw, and I'll see if I can find it, but I just saw some graphs, Nate, worldwide,
yeah.
By age demographic of people who thought democracy was important.
Yeah.
And it's us old folks, you and me, Steve, that still think democracy
clinging
is important.
To our
it
democracy.
It went down to like 35%, right, with millennials? It was
millennials thought democracy was not important.
Yeah. Wow. And they would be fine with a military state.
And we've also seen studies where you say to someone, here's an ice cream cone, I'll trade you for your password. Mm. And they go, okay. You know, I mean, like...
they have a very different sense of what your password is.
How you get the gun from a grammaton cleric. Yeah. You ask him for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this is all a grim topic. Let's change to something. You know what I think the big story of 2016 was? Pokemon Go.
Oh, you stole mine.
Was that going to be yours?
Be mine.
All right,
it was a phenomenal.
I didn't ask you what yours was. I apologize.
No, not at all. So I guess it's not exactly Apple news, but it was. I think that was part of the appeal, was that it was both Apple and Android, and it hit all at once. And it was, I remember seeing their presentation where they showed, this is what we expected in terms of traffic. This is the maximum we expected. This is what hit
happened.
Us. So you had a perfect confluence of a platform that was beyond any specific hardware vendor. You had location services, you had gamification, and you had this massive appeal where you could play together and people were going out to parks and families
it
were discovering
amazing.
Their neighborhoods. And
you couldn't move without people playing Pokemon Go on the street.
Yeah, I remember the first day it happened. In the restaurant where I was eating, one of the servers came outside because I sit out on the patio, and she said, "I hate this Pokemon thing because like all of her tables,
nobody's paying any
they
attention.
Weren't talking
and
to
Steve
her.
Steve was like,
wondering.
"Quiet, I'm catching a Snorlax.
Come back later. I gotta go get a Zichiku or something." I mean, she didn't know what was going on.
That first weekend, I went to the park, and there was this elderly gentleman, and he said, "My daughter is out here catching Pokemon with me. She doesn't want to spend a minute with me normally.
Cool.
This is the
so
best
cool.
weekend of my life."
And yet. And I didn't think this was going to be a flash in the pan. It was a flash in the pan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. It was sold. It was the fastest selling game in history in 5 days, outsold every other game. In fact, Google Play did, at the end of the year, name it the top game of 2016. Yeah. But it's also, I mean, I don't see anybody playing it anymore.
I play it. So I think they said it's about 10% of initially, but they had a huge problem because they couldn't scale. Scaling turned out to be non-trivial for them, and that put the brakes on new features. They had to work so hard to roll it. I think they just added China, which is a huge market for them, and they couldn't focus on new features. So only last week did we see like the Ditto creature came out, and then Generation 2 is going to come out.
Is that why everybody in every social feed I saw this purple blob?
Yes.
It's because
it was a new. But their problem is that they would have maybe got, like, they're at 10% now. Maybe they would have subsisted at 20%, but they couldn't do it. So the question now is, can they grow again? Can they do Generation 2 and at least get some sort of an ongoing audience?
Well, and I think there was probably an initial fad value also. So it's not clear to me. I mean, we know what the shape of that curve is. That even if they had been able to scale, the curve would have probably still come down to about where it is now, because there were people who were going to screw around with it for a couple of weeks and then go, okay, back to my regularly scheduled life.
But just technology. I mean, it's augmented reality. It's geolocation. It gets people out. They've done everything they can to make sure you can't play from a car. They're making an Apple Watch app and a Pokemon Go bracelet, so you have to go out. And it's going to be a workout app on Apple Watch. It's not going to be a game. It's like you start it, and it does a workout for you.
So it'll become part of the culture, but not at this crazy,
you wonder, like, the technology. There were rumors they do a Harry Potter Beasts version of it, so you could go out and catch magical beasts.
Yeah, I thought they were going to do
that. Yeah, if Pokemon wasn't their thing.
It didn't happen. Some said this is the first camel's nose under the tent of augmented reality,
right.
Getting us used to.
Yes.
Wait a minute, we've got to pause for a moment because the hot buttered rums
are
here. Ooh,
those look good.
Wow.
Happy holidays.
Hello.
We're enjoying our special Christmas edition of This Week in Tech.
Wow.
You're a
nice
gentleman, sir.
Done.
I'll tell you, all right, since you take Pokemon Go, I have another biggest story of 2016.
Thank
we'll talk about that as you get whipped cream on your nose. first, though, a word from Rocket Mortgage, our sponsor for the show. It's nice that Rocket Mortgage doesn't take time off for the holidays because they're always there. If you're looking around and you say, I think I see a house in our future, or and you want to get a mortgage, or maybe you're ready to refi, and you're watching this show, you're probably pretty geeky. I can imagine that you don't want to go back in time to 1956, bring a banker's box full of papers to the loan office while the loan guy goes, I remember this, actually. He has a clipboard with the various loans. Let me see what loan would be. Well, I don't know. And it's the finest print you ever saw. The rate here, it seems to be based on the LIBOR. Forget that. Forget that. Go to Rocket Mortgage. And you just answer a few questions. You could send them your statements, your pay stubs, your all the information they need with a push of a button. Actually, the touch of a thumb, because you could do this on your phone or your tech. You could even do it at the open house like this couple does. They're looking at a house. They suddenly get the itch. We should buy this. And before they leave the open house, they've got the Rocket Mortgage screen that says you're approved. And approved in minutes for not just any loan, but a loan that's tailored for you. Rocket Mortgage comes to you from Quicken Loans, the premier mortgage lender in the country. And, of course, they've got a product for geeks, and I'm so glad. Rocket Mortgage. If you want to find out more, get ready. Put this on a Post-it note. You never know when you're going to be at that open house and want to buy. QuickenLoans.com/twit and the number 2. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. Rocket Mortgage, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. We thank them so much for their support for our holiday special. We've got hosts from various shows here, and this is a lot of fun. We asked a bunch of hosts. You guys were the first to respond. Lucky you.
Smart you.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's perfect because the Twit holiday party is tonight, so you're all here.
Did they know there was going to be hot water drunk?
Oh, yes. How come I got the big mug?
There's a chief Twit.
And by the way, that's the other big story of the year. Anthony Nielsen, who is one of our great creative editors, also happens to be an amazing mixologist.
Mm. Oh, I'm convinced.
Apparently,
it's
is it
so
Thursday?
Good.
It's one of the nights of the week. Wednesday night, we leave early, and apparently a party breaks out.
Don't let Leo know there's a party going on in here. Get the beverages.
And like all good pushers, Anthony doesn't drink his own concoctions, but he makes everybody else.
That's good stuff.
That's all the good office gossip.
Mmm. It is good stuff.
What is this? Is this a hot buttered rum?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Thank you, Anthony.
Yes.
Thank you. The show will be getting more interesting progressively as it goes by.
That's right.
So, nice job. Mm-hmm. Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Brian Burnett, you dressed up for the show. Nice to see you as well. That was another story for us. This is a brand new studio. We moved out of the Brick House studio.
It's a nice studio.
Year.
It's great.
I really.
You're seeing it for the first time, all three of you.
Yep, it's the right size.
Renee Ritchie from iMore, Denise Howell from Twill, This Week in Law, Steve Gibson from Security Now. I should introduce you once again. Nice to have you here. This is our first holiday in the new studio.
It looks fantastic. Yes.
Parking's better.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a for sure. It was hard to park in my old place.
Yeah.
But,
and it's cozy.
It's a little smaller, but you know what? Doesn't this look kind of the same, really, frankly?
Yeah.
What do you need?
And if Lisa and I are yelling outside, it doesn't bother you in here.
That's a big improvement. And I think really the real reason we moved was because the rest of the staff hated that they couldn't say anything. They had to whisper all the time while we were doing shows. Now they're drinking. They're
the poor the librarian lost her shushing job, but everyone else is happy.
Mm-hmm. Burke hooked up a police... Oh, I got whipped cream on my... Burke hooked up a police light and a horn, and he'd push the button, and it was too noisy down the hall, and the light would go...
You got burked. You got burked.
That's what we said. You got burked. We've been burked.
You've been burked. You've been burked.
All right, everybody. Okay, I think one of the big stories, and it's much like there's some relationship to the Pokemon Go story, is virtual reality.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of a flash in the pan this year. This was the year that the Oculus Rift finally was sold to the public. Then HTC followed shortly thereafter with the HTC Vive. Sony, towards the end of the year, released its PlayStation VR. Yep. So for the first time, people were able to, in their homes, play VR. Everybody got excited about it.
I can be Batman, Leo. I can be Batman.
Can you jump off a building and swoop down?
I started off with the Vive. Was the first one I tried. And then Georgia stole my Oculus. Okay, but I started off with the Vive. And it's great because it's got the different cameras and different areas, and you can actually move through the room, and it does feel like a holodeck. You put it on, and there's like, if you have to walk a plank, my brain will not let me do it. It's just, it feels too real.
You were talking about that plank.
Yeah, it's called Richie's Plank, ironically. And Georgia put it out there, and I was supposed to walk on it, and my entire body system shut down. Said, there's no way I'm walking out on this.
You know, as an old timer, there's a
pattern. Have you tried these?
There's a pattern that I've seen often.
Yeah.
There was a first round of home computers that were too soon and too early, and they died.
The Altair.
There was also something called
the
Newton.
Commodore.
There was a Newton once that was ambitious. It was too soon.
Yeah.
And even laptops, I remember, luggables, as they were nicknamed.
Compact.
It just, it's like, well, it kind of works, but would you have an extension cord? And so now we just take them for granted. And I think, because what generally happens is that visionaries are out in front and they're often right about what, but they're normally wrong about when.
Right.
They see it too soon. And so oftentimes they get arrows in their backs that are fatal. And so I'm interested in this. I think that, Renee was talking about how if you put goggles on that shows you a narrow plank over a gorge,
you're scared.
Yeah. You can't walk across
it. You're scared.
Yeah. I mean, and so the point is that, we're creatures that take the environment that our senses deliver to us literally. And so I think essentially this means that this kind of technology that can create an artificial environment will be incredibly powerful. I just think I'm not in a hurry. We got a lot of time left.
Even with the PlayStation, which is like the most mainstream one, you start playing Batman Arkham VR and you put it on and you look down and you are Batman.
It's fun.
You jump and you gatling.
Do you think you'll keep playing it though, hours in, next month and the month after?
So Georgia plays paintball, her husband plays pool. Like, he hates pool, but he plays VR pool. It's the weirdest experience. You can be almost anything. It's the holodeck.
My take on it is opposite of yours. And I'm not sure. And we have them all, and I played with them all. And I played with them to the point where I go, okay, I get it. I have several. I think you make an excellent point. It could just be too early days. But it could also be like 3D.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
So there is precedent for it. And there's two trends happening here. There's the one trend which we're trying to make computer reality more immersive, more real.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the end game is from Neuromancer, or Snow Crash, the implant or the metaverse, where we are – it's almost indistinguishable from reality. And certainly I would love to get there. And if we get there, the holodeck would be so happy.
If you just had something that was appeared in your visual field without looking like a goon from some strange –
And I think we might get there.
Yeah.
I think we might get there. But I think VR certainly is – I mean, 3D, that's what 3D was supposed to be, right? It's a more immersive movie, and it's just annoying, at least to me.
Well, it's cumbersome. Vive or the Oculus, you need a powerful PC.
So I think at some point we will get to some sort of immersive technology. I personally don't think it'll be screens 3 inches from your eyes.
Right.
But I don't know what else is out there. So, I mean, I don't think we'll be jacking in any time in my lifetime.
When you say it's like 3D, do you mean how in the 50s people went to 3D movies and they were
50s.
Kind of hokey?
2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, oh, yeah, it's true.
But right? Now, remember everybody got 3D TVs? Now nobody makes 3D TVs.
Right.
None of the companies that forced 3D TVs on you 2 years ago makes them anymore.
But the movies are good.
Eh.
I'd always prefer,
go see a 3D
We're going to go see Rogue One in 3D for sure.
Yeah.
I prefer 2D movies.
It's funny because
I do too.
I have two very good friends. They feel exactly opposite. I don't care. Jenny absolutely will not see a movie not in 3D.
It's dimmer. Mm-hmm.
And another friend
Lisa
of mine
likes 3D.
Doesn't care at all.
It's dimmer. We went to see Fantastic Creatures and had to train them.
Race them. That's Pokemon.
It's the world's largest, longest title. Anyway, and there was a choice of 3D or 2D. And I wanted to go to 2D, but Lisa preferred 3D.
I was told to see Doctor Strange in 3D because of the building effect.
Doctor Strange in 3D was very cool. Very cool. So, I think the jury's still out on VR, that it could be the 3D or it could be the metaverse. But what the other trend that's right alongside it is this trend towards new user interfaces for computing. And I do think there's something there. I think AR, for instance, augmented reality. Well, look what I'm playing with here. This is my newest computer. I got this earlier this month. This is the Surface studio from Microsoft. And if you'd asked me a couple of, you know, years ago, you think you'll ever have a giant screen computer? I mean, this would have been science fiction. Mm-hmm. And it really works quite well. It's really, it's kind of an amazing thing. So I think new user interfaces are very possibly.
And voice has come a long way this year,
and,
too.
And voice is the other thing. And so that's, so VR would be one of my votes for a story that may or may not be a flash in the pan.
Yep.
AR related, but voice technology. Look at the Amazon Echo and now the Google Home, which and Siri and Cortana, for that matter. Huge.
Right,
and Viv, that Samsung just bought.
Yeah, they bought the guys who created Siri.
That Clausen.
After they sold it to Apple, spun it off at a new company called Viv, and Samsung just acquired them. Samsung is
becoming table stakes.
Yeah, it's table stakes, right? If you're going to be a player in the mobile category.
Absolutely.
And maybe one way to frame what you're suggesting, Leo, is that we also need to recognize that just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Right.
So
Silicon Valley will do it if they can.
Right.
Because they don't know any more than we do what the next thing is. They're throwing spaghetti on the wall.
And I guess that ties in the AI because that's behind a lot of these voice.
And that to me is, if I had to pick, and these are all huge stories, and we're talking about massive trends here, but I think this is the year that we're going to look back and say machine learning finally became an important goal for these
because we have connectivity, we have cloud, we have
they were using Google Now and Siri and Cortana for, and they never talked about AI, never talked about machine learning, never talked about computer vision, but they start Google put it on stage, and then after that everyone had to talk about it.
That was October 4th when Google had its event, and Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, talked about, and I think very cogently, the various stages of computing, whether personal computing. And that, what were they? There was personal computing, then there was mobile computing. Mm-hmm. I must have left something.
Cloud.
Then there was cloud computing, but now there's artificial intelligence. And I remember we did it on triangulation. Kevin Kelly, who wrote a new book about the future. And one of the things he said is, what happens with these technologies? And you could talk about computing as being an example, big data being another example. Is that you take something you already had and then you add a layer of this new technology. He uses an example of when electrification became big at the turn of the last century. A farmer would look at, well, what have I got? Oh, I've got this pump that'll get water. I have to pump it. Yeah. I wonder what an electric motor would do to change that. And whole new industries were born. He said that happens every time when industrial era, the electrical era,
cars are driving themselves now.
And now he says what you're going to see and the opportunity that lies, and people will look back and say, oh, you were alive in 2016? you were around when the information age turned into the machine learning age and the artificial intelligence.
What's the culpability of that? Like if your AI accepts an invitation for you or makes a car decision for you and there's a bad result, is it your fault? Is it the company who made the AI's fault? Is it the AI's fault?
Well, that was another big story this year is the self-driving cars. And wasn't the decision... This was the year that the first Tesla driver was killed in a crash, remember?
Yep.
Right. He wasn't self-driving. I mean, it wasn't a self-driving car, technically.
As it turns out, neither he nor the Tesla saw the truck across the road.
Yep.
And he was speeding, and he plowed into it and passed away, sad to say. But nevertheless, it brought up this whole fear of self-driving cars.
And they weren't driving themselves last year. It's like, I remember when this sort of happened. It's like, what?
When did that happen?
When did cars learn to drive?
Right.
This was also the year that Tesla said, we're going to put all the hardware in our Teslas, starting right now, to do self-driving.
Right.
But, you know, we still have to work on the software a little bit.
But it'll be upgradable.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, the AI was a big story with assistants, but you saw, like, Tim Cook started talking about how Apple uses AI in their devices for battery life. Because it can intelligently figure out maybe what you're going to do next and then start to pre-cache things for you. So this technology has been – they've been doing this for years, but now they're sort of talking about it. And it's become not just a thing that helps you make an appointment, but something that preserves your battery life, adjusts your phone performance, and does all these things before you, totally behind the scenes. We don't even see them.
Wasn't this the year that a court decided who's responsible if your self-driving car – causes a crash?
I think the National Highway Safety
and NHTSA,
whatever that acronym is, decided that the driver of a self-driving car
is still responsible.
Is the whatever system is driving the car.
Oh, the driver is the software.
Yes.
That's right.
So,
right.
I mean, that, so where, how does that all
does it
play out?
Like, oh, there's a grandmother in that car, but there's two kids in this one. So the cars are going to talk and say, sorry, granny, the two kids.
Yeah, well, that's what they're trying to figure out as they build out the AIs.
These ethical dilemmas.
Yeah, MIT has this really interesting project called the Moral Machine that we've talked about on Twill a couple of times, where you go and you help them answer scenarios. They're trying to get human intelligence to help answer those hard questions. You know, how would the average person resolve these conflicts? And it's a fascinating exercise to make yourself go through. It's a strange exercise. Like they bring some moral judgments into it where some of the scenarios tell you that the person the car is about to hit, if you don't swerve and hit something else, is a criminal. So, you know, they try and bring some moral values into your decision making. Sure.
Start judging. Let's see.
Okay, doing Steve.
Okay, what should the self-driving car do? So, here's the choice. Oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
So, you could either plow into four pedestrians and kill them, or you could swerve and plow into
a barricade
and kill the passengers. Here's another one.
I guess it depends upon your point of view.
Oh, and there's I see. So if you swerve into
It's a Kobayashi Maru.
It is, and they give you some context. I'm not seeing it on your screen right now, but they
in this case, the self-driving car with sudden brake failure will continue ahead and drive through the pedestrian crossing ahead. One male athlete will die. One man, one homeless person, one girl, one criminal. Now, here's what I think about this. The car doesn't freaking know that. The car is going to do what you would do and I would do, which is do the best it can. It's not going to make a calculus that says, well, this guy should survive. This guy shouldn't.
Spin, kill half the pedestrians and half the passengers.
It will attempt to avoid the accident as best it can, just as you would do without doing the calculus of, well, that guy's an athlete and that's a grandmother. Let's kill the grandmother. That's a stupid question. That's not the kind of question.
The ambulance chasing attorneys are just salivating.
The robot chasing attorneys are just salivating.
I actually think we're in a situation where, you know, we all think it's weird because we're not used to self-driving cars. But as this all gets worked out, I think you're right, Leo, that people are going to look back and say,
what were you worried about that?
Exactly. Well, that, you know, those human drivers were far more dangerous. That's the real point, isn't it? The most interesting wrinkle I've seen on this thus far was something that caught my eye just this week. A study out of UC Santa Cruz that wonders how pedestrians are going to react to knowing that self-driving cars are programmed to avoid them.
The article you pulled up said they're going to bully. Yes! They're going to bully the self-driving cars.
Yes!
I'm going to cross the street as slowly as I want to.
Right. I'm going to go play some stickball in the street. Well, having just visited New York for the first time in a long time last summer, I can totally see this playing out where you get some pretty gutsy pedestrians
talking about a traffic jam.
Come on and get me.
The cars would just never move.
You know, this actually already did happen. This was the year, remember, that the Google car got in an accident. It plowed into a bus. Remember, the car was driving, autonomous vehicle driving down Mountain View in city traffic, which is notoriously difficult for these cars. And it would normally be in the lane to turn right, but it turned out there was construction going on. So it got to the end of that lane. There were barriers. It couldn't, and it needed to merge back into traffic to go around the barrier. It saw the bus, and it plowed into the bus. Because it assumed, the software is programmed to assume, the bus will see me and let me in. It was a very slow speed accident. Nobody was hurt, I should point out. But what Google said is, yay, that's good, because now we're going to tune our software. Because we realize that what a human would do is look at the bus driver, see if the bus driver sees
get eye contact
me and understands I'm going to get in, and maybe even get a little tacit or explicit permission to merge in. The software didn't do that. The software just assumed. So the software is going to improve because of that. But that's a really – so this study says pedestrians know that drivers don't want to run them over.
Right.
So why not just step out into the street and assert the right of way? Well, because there's always a small probability the driver's inattentive, drunk, a sociopath, or can't stop in time. On the other hand, if it's an autonomous vehicle, well, I know it's going to stop. So no more crosswalk chicken. From now on, pedestrians go, I'm walking in the street.
So you give the car a random number generator, and one out of a million times it doesn't stop, and that just keeps pedestrians on it.
And to Denise's point, we often hear the argument that air travel is so much safer than freeway travel.
Right.
And so, you know,
you know, yes, if automated cars do a better job than people, that's a strong defense for...
Statistically speaking, it's still the safest way to travel.
Right.
Well, and this also is the year that... Actually, last year was the year that fatalities on the highway went up after many years of decline because of distracted driving.
And oh, this is which the year. Is such a problem.
So the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and HTSA suggested that it would be a good idea if Apple and Google, then we're not going to make you, but it would be a good idea if you had software in your operating system that would prevent the driver from using the phone.
Not the passengers.
The equivalent driver. Of a car mode but how would to, it, no, to today's it airplane mode.
It wouldn't. These are non-technologists suggesting these solutions.
So they actually said... Block the driver, but not the passenger?
Well, that was a bunch of the debate. I was reading the article, and it was like, well, passenger, like you have navigation software, and you have passengers, and you have kids.
Right.
And you know,
Waze does that. Waze says, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, but if you're a passenger, say I'm in a...
Well, you give it, like same thing with Pokemon, a bunch of other things. It says I'm a passenger, and you have to... And supposedly, I guess, if you get in an accident, and you hit that I'm a passenger button, and you weren't, then you lied, you know, and it's definitely your fault.
Yeah,
But I used to commute to work, and there were people reading newspapers on their steering wheels, putting on makeup, turning around and yelling at the kids while they're driving. I mean,
can't debate the statistic that highway deaths are declining until this last year. And in fact, so they were up 10% in 2015, and in the first half of 2016, they're up like 15%.
Well, who hasn't seen a car stopped at a green light? You know, the light turns green. Nothing happened.
But I'm trying to find an emoji, Steve. I need the sarcastic face.
If the person in the driver's seat is going like this, they're playing Pokemon Go. That's I know that for sure. Actually, Pokemon Go won't work at past 10 miles an hour. Right?
No, yeah, they put a firm.
But that didn't solve anything because people just slow down. Right?
Yeah, well, but also, it's a whole big debate because there are people in rural areas who they just can't play at that point because it's like 5 miles between every Pokemon for them.
Well, I didn't play Ingress. Yeah. Because at the time, Petaluma was not a hip village, and so there was very little Ingress going on. So you had to be if you were in San Francisco, you could play Ingress.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, Niantic, which created Ingress, then created Pokemon Go, and apparently did something that made Petaluma interested because you couldn't move.
Yeah.
Right.
I remember going down to, Lisa and I were in San Diego, Coronado. And there's one median strip where there were 3 Pokestops and a gym. In one small area, and we're driving down the street, and it looks like it's Woodstock.
Well, they had incidents in Montreal, in somewhere, I think it was Singapore, where like a very rare Pokemon spawned, and just hundreds of people flooded the area, and police were there trying to get them to disperse. Like, no, I have to catch my Snorlax.
Wow. Ditto, it's lucky the Ditto came out now.
Yes.
Had the Ditto come out earlier.
Well, Ditto's hard because, you see, you don't know who it is. You have to catch a normal Pokemon, and then it could transform into a Ditto. So you've got to catch everything in case it's a Ditto.
That keeps me awake.
They're smart. I mean, when you look at the psychology that they're figuring out in order to get people to play and play in very specific ways, I mean, they must be employing tons of scientists to do all this stuff.
By the way, that's ReneeRitchieEyeMore.com. Denise Howell from This Week in Law, and I love your... It's kind of a Grinch Stole Christmas.
Yeah, it is.
Whoville
it's
hat.
A Grinchy hat.
It's really cute. I apparently have an elf that has somehow got submerged in my cerebral cortex. This is weird. I should probably take this off. And Steve Gibson's also here from Security Now.
We have a halo here for you, too, should you be so compelled.
Oh, should I go to the halo? I think I'll go to the halo. We thought you might wear the halo, Denise, but since you've recused yourself.
Yes, I've gone Grinch. There you go.
I should be in Victoria's Secret Fashion Show. That's what I should be. This was the 40th anniversary this year of Apple Computer. 40 years old.
Talk about they're still relevant.
Yeah, talk about old-timers.
Old-timers. We're not celebrating the 40th anniversary of Commodore.
No.
Atari.
TSR, yeah.
Radio Shack.
No. Even IBM is a completely different company than it was 40 years ago.
Yeah. And I guess after 40 years, Apple decided you don't need a headphone
Compact.
Jack. You don't need to. You don't. This
USB-A ports. Come on.
You don't need a headphone. So this was the year. In fact, at the beginning of the year, I think it was the first story we covered in 2016, was a consumer petition because of the rumor that Apple would be dumping the headphone jack. 200,000 people, this was from the first tweet of the year, 200,000 people petitioned Apple to not ditch the headphone jack. So here we are, they did, They shipped the iPhone 7, headphone jackless iPhone 7 in September. You've got one. I've got one.
I don't have one.
Nothing but speaker grills.
They promised AirPods.
Yes.
You have some, but they're not the official ones.
I have the pre-release.
I have a round hole.
Wow. Did you drill that in your iPhone?
It doesn't work as well now.
Now, here we are a year later. It didn't seem to affect the sales of the iPhone 7. No. Those 29,000 people, I guess, changed their mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it turns out it's not an issue for people who never used headphones or who always use them. Because people who always use them just put the adapter on and forgot about it. But if you were an occasional user, like you just used
it on
airplanes.
That's where the inconvenience comes from.
Because you wouldn't remember that you didn't have it. And you get on the plane, and by then it's too late. There's just no hope for you. So it's the in-flight entertainment system or nothing.
Ah. That's a nightmare. AirPods, somebody wrote to Tim Cook. I think. We don't know if this is a real email or not. I don't think it's ever been verified.
No, they...
They wrote to Tim Cook saying, Tim, I want to be able to charge my iPhone and listen to music. When are you coming out with the AirPods? Tweak your ear and let me know, because if it's not going to be for a while, I'll go out getting somebody else's Bluetooth headphones. And Tim supposedly... Again, this hasn't been able to, we haven't been able to verify it, said in the next few weeks. So sometime before Christmas, maybe by the time you're watching this.
I want to give them this talking stuffer so badly.
You'll be like Renee holding an AirPod in your hot little hand.
Mm-hmm. I want to give them, as they're the ultimate stalking stuffer. I'm sure Apple retail is beside themselves that they haven't been selling them since September.
And they look so alien.
Yeah,
I mean, they look like something right out of sci-fi.
Yeah. All right. It'll go well with a Santa hat. It looks like you have icicles coming out of your ears.
And are you a runner?
I do like hiking, but I did a bunch of things to try because the cords don't pull. And what I found
doesn't
was
look
was
as
the
weird
cords pulling them out.
Mm-hmm. It does not look as weird as I thought.
It looks a little strange.
I use just one most of the time because I listen to Security Now. Or I
can you get flesh tone?
Pardon? No.
Can you get anything other than white?
No rose gold. No jet black.
You can't get anything.
No.
Black would work. Maybe.
Any color.
I don't know.
You can get any color you want as long as it's iPod white.
Yeah.
Interface fangs.
And the speakers are fantastic. People think I'm on my phone when I'm talking.
$160
Yeah. You mean the mics? The microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah, the microphone is fantastic. There's dual noise canceling mics, and it automatically switches depending on which one it's getting the best sound from.
You were saying?
Well, I just said $160. Yeah. I wonder how. Woo. I mean, there's certainly pent up demand, but I wonder how well they're selling. You know what? I am no longer second guessing Apple fans. They will buy anything.
I was going to say, can Apple do the wrong thing? By definition?
There was this great tweet from Neil Seibert 2 days ago where he said, the Amazon Echo has sold like maybe 10 or 20% of what the Apple Watch has sold.
Right.
But the Amazon Echo was a smash success and the Apple Watch is doomed.
Right.
So it's like, it's a totally different metric.
It is. And I'm wearing an Apple Watch. Yeah. But I have to say, in terms of impact, the Echo has a larger impact than the Apple Watch. It isn't just units sold that makes something a success or not.
It's availability in America.
And it's pretty... Says the Canadian.
It's one free with a buy six and get one free.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And now you're supposed to get one with a screen in it, right? A 7-inch display.
Well, Amazon said this year it was going to double down on the Echo. They now have... There's 5,000 Echo tasks. That's a lot to remember. Yeah. You have to search to find one. They have just this month, they opened an API that will allow a more complete, for instance, weather will allow a more complete interaction in the kind of native mode. They've added some new words. There is a rumor they're going to do a kitchen Echo that has a screen in it.
Yeah.
I think that Jeff Bezos has indicated that the Echo, I think we have the story here.
As long as it doesn't have that 3D camera interface, I'll be happy.
It's like the fourth major offering of Amazon.
Yeah, the fourth horseman of the Amazon.
Exactly.
As long as they get over, we're recording you all the time, I'll be happy.
Well, do you think they are?
I don't know. That's how I understand that
Steve,
it works.
Steve, no. Okay. We got the guy.
Yeah.
Let's get Steve to explain it.
Please explain.
Here's my thinking on this. There are three words the Echo can respond to. I won't say what they are because we don't want to wake any echoes up that people are listening.
Oh, do it.
But in the Echo, they have waveforms for those three words.
Templates.
The Echo's always on, but all it's really doing is gathering every waveform that goes on and comparing to that template. And at that, it is not sending anything back to Amazon until it matches that template.
Right. So think of it like a time-occupying buffer.
So audio's coming in, filling it, it fills this buffer, and then it falls off the end. And that the size, the depth of that buffer is the period of time that the local processor looks at what it has heard and can figure out what it wants to do.
And it's not a sophisticated processor. That's about the limit of what it can do.
Correct. And the point is that if it hears a trigger word, then it's able to take to essentially go online, to take it seriously, and then save the buffer plus what follows, and that gets shot up to the cloud for then AI level interpretation and action.
See, I believe you, but I still think Edward Snowden would disassemble it if it came into your house.
Right, and how do you know this?
Well, because traffic by looking at the traffic of the dot and the echo,
so
and
fire
people have
wire
there
shark.
Is no communication going right. on until it's you know until she triggers
now,
and then there's a spurt.
Mm-hmm. I have to say. You know, of course, it's if they were sending back all that traffic, you'd see it. You go to fire up Wireshark, and you would see a significant amount of traffic
right.
constantly
mm-hmm.
going back to the servers. I am sure, and I haven't fired it up, although I was just searching, and there are some people who have done this. I am sure that some material is always being sent to Amazon, some small amount.
Metadata.
I would also bet it's encrypted,
right.
so we don't know what it is.
Right.
And so the one... If you really wanted a conspiracy theory, the one thing that probably that could be provably possible, not provably true, but provably possible, is that the Echo may have other words it's looking for. Let's say product categories, like suitcases or or baby strollers.
And Leo goes on his browser.
And if it does hear those words, it sends a ping back saying, hey, they're interested in baby strollers.
Well, wow. It's also
I find that hard to believe, but that's conceivable.
It could be tweaked to do that, though, probably.
Probably.
To your point,
so if law enforcement wanted to get involved and say, let's have Echo in this house listen for these words.
That's just where I was going. To your point, it's not open source. We don't know everything it does. And we don't know that exactly as Denise says, that Amazon couldn't be compelled to turn a specific home's Echoes into microphones that then start streaming everything up. So, yeah. Again, we don't have any control over that. We just
right.
assume it would be so damaging to Amazon that they would resist with every ability that they have. And hopefully... design it so that it does not have that ability, that they cannot be compelled to switch it on and just stream.
Yeah. I found one article from Champlin College, the Senator Patrick Leahy Center for Digital Investigation, which I like the name, that is doing forensics on the Amazon Echo using Wireshark to analyze
what's
traffic.
Going on.
At this point, I don't see any evidence in here. And I think if they were... there would be howls of protest.
Yes.
There's plenty of people out there who can use Wireshark, who can watch Amazon's traffic. Mm-hmm. If that kind of volume of traffic were sent back, we'd know that by now. What we don't, what I think we can say safely we don't know is if in individual cases a law enforcement agency hasn't said to Amazon, well, turn on Denise Howell's Echo anyway.
By the way, same thing with Xbox, same thing with Siri, same thing with Cortana.
How many things?
Thing
your phone. Look at your phone. Nate can do that with your phone. It's got a microphone.
Right. And you know, I haven't delved too deeply into terms of service governing these things, but they're going to say that they have the obligation to comply with government requests.
And even if they didn't.
And that puts you on notice.
And to be held harmless.
Right.
Yeah.
And then that's just America. These things are sold in many countries that have very different forms of government.
I feel like that horse has left the barn, though, because we all carry smartphones with built-in microphones, cameras, GPSs, motion sensors,
speakers,
accelerometers, speakers, and everything else. We're talking about Jason Bourne movies.
Yeah.
Mm. In every one of those five Jason Bourne movies, at some point... oh, somebody's calling me.
Hi.
Hey.
At some point, somebody... has a smartphone that Jason Bourne takes the battery out and crunches the phone up into little pieces and throws out the car window, right?
Right.
Because everybody by now knows.
Or drops it in a goat cart and goes in the other direction.
When they went to some countries on diplomatic missions, they would take apart their phones and leave them on the planes, not even bother taking them out.
Yeah, don't take them in.
Yeah.
Right.
This was the year BlackBerry died. Or not.
They're investigating self-driving cars. So
they own QNX, which is actually probably a pretty good. That's a real
very
operating
nice
system.
Little operating system. Yeah.
we had heard that they had announced that they were not going to make any more hardware, but then I've heard another rumor that they are. So I don't know if BlackBerry is.
Yeah, they've lost a lot of talent.
And do we care?
That's probably a better. That's probably a better question.
There were very few countries that made their own operating systems, and Canada had two of them: the BBOS and Unix. And then they merged, and now we may not have one anymore.
It's the last Canadian operating system,
and not many countries. I said have that sort of claim.
Somebody should make that movie. Maybe Werner Herzog.
Documentary.
Yeah. And this is the year Gawker died.
Ooh.
Not many tears shed there. Although the occasion, the situation of his demise is chilling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, of course, it was a lawsuit by wrestler Hulk Hogan, a defamation suit. He won a massive amount. It was over $100 million or $110 million.
Yes, huge.
And then we found after he won that case in Florida that he was bankrolled by Silicon Valley venture capitalist Peter Thiel.
Former PayPal, Facebook investor.
Who didn't like Gawker because they had outed him as a gay man some years ago. I have reasons to hate Gawker, too. I just don't have the deep pockets. I would have given Hulk some money if he asked. But it is chilling, right, to have a billionaire say, I don't like this media outlet. Let's put this out of business.
Well, yes. And Gawker had some excellent legal arguments to make in its favor, and they never really got to be made because they never got the chance to take it upon it.
They lost in Florida. Did they not appeal? Or could they not afford to appeal?
They settled. Yeah.
And then were sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And essentially, that was the end of Gawker.
Speaking of sold, nobody wants to buy Twitter.
This is another big story of the year.
Can we chip in at the table right here?
Yeah. As the stock price, actually, you know, it's interesting because this, of course, Twitter was in play. The board apparently wanted to sell it. Jack Dorsey didn't. The CEO did not want to sell it, but the board always wins in battles like that. They prepared it for sale. They talked to a lot of people, including Mark Benioff, Salesforce.com, and even
Disney,
Google.
Number
of other, Disney. Everybody said, yeah, no.
And Google would have been like a patron saint. It was like, just buy it because
you did such good
you're
work
Google.
With Jaiku.
But I mean, we have this. I spent a lot of time, I'm sorry, everybody, I apologize, over this past year talking about this. I'm not a big fan of Twitter. It's kind of started to look like Reddit and 4chan as just kind of a cesspool. And yet, it had huge importance during the presidential election, if no other time.
During disasters.
There's some. Twitter's a really interesting case of being both simultaneously amazingly useful and horrendously...
Best and worst of the internet.
Yeah. The best and worst of the internet.
Right. I forget which Twitter representative it was who said this, but in response to queries about whether President-elect Trump is going to be able to keep his account because he may from time to time be in violation of their fake news policy, they have not come out with any sort of definitive statement, but they have made it clear that all users must comply with that policy.
They said if he violates our terms of service, we'll suspend his account. Facebook said they would not because it has import over and above its policies. Yeah. That this is, and I do hope they don't quell the real Donald Trump because that is a fun feed. You just never know what you
And it actually is real. It's not a parody account.
It's him.
It is real, yes.
In fact, there was data research done early this year during the campaign, and there were two kinds of tweets on Trump's Twitter feed. One set was very normal campaign promotional tweets. Those all came from an Apple
phone. Yeah, the sent from iPhone ones are the campaign staff.
And then the late night tweets.
Android.
All came from Android.
An American-made Android phone.
Well, and we had learned that President-elect Trump had, after the San Bernardino case, decided to hand in his iPhone and get a Samsung Galaxy phone. Not a Note.
A Galaxy 7?
Galaxy S7. And continues apparently to use that. And I haven't seen any iPhone tweets of late. It's all been Android tweets.
Yeah.
He also, on January 20th, will gain the at POTUS account. Twitter can't shut down the at POTUS account for hate speech because that would just be.
they accidentally shut down at Jack last week.
They did shut down Jack's account. And then he also, we found out, will have access to the emergency alert system, which is unblockable.
At 3 a.m.
Now, do you have that in Canada where you can...
We don't. I mean, like on people in America, if you go to iOS or Android, you go into the alerts, there's an option for emergency alert. We do not. We
there's
have an
Amber
system,
alerts.
But it's not...
There's emergency alerts.
We have those. They're just not on our mobile devices.
And there's a third category
that presidential.
Yeah. It doesn't show up on the iPhone because you can't disable it. It does show up on Google, but it's still grayed out. You can't disable it.
Huh.
Those alerts will go through. Now, I've had people email me after we talked about this saying, well, you know, in tornado country, these are very helpful, these alerts. They sound a very high-pitched tone 6 or 7 times.
Wow.
We've had them here. We had a flood alert during heavy rains earlier this year. And we get Amber alerts from time to time, child abduction alerts. And it's a piercing tone, but you can disable those. Mm-hmm. You will not be able to disable.
So at 3 in the morning, you can hear beep, 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 wrong. And that's it? You got to go back to sleep? All bets are off.
We're in uncharted territory.
We are in uncharted territory, and I find it fascinating, frankly. All right, what else? What else happened? Minecraft topped 100 million sales this year. What a great acquisition by Microsoft of all people! Mm-hmm. They bought the Minecraft game from Mojang, making Notch, the creator of Minecraft, a billionaire and a recluse. Poor Notch. Hey, there's another guy tweeting things like, I'm so lonely. You could have all the money in the world, but no friends. He later said, I was just depressed. I feel better now. He did buy a mansion, stole it out from under Kanye. I think it was Kanye and Kim. An $81 million Hollywood mansion. You probably live nearby.
Too far south near Steve.
With its very own candy room.
Why so, not? That's what you need.
Leo, if I'd had $20 billion in my 20s, I would not have survived. I would have like tried to pilot my own 747. It would have hit a mountain or something.
Can you imagine?
Wouldn't have gone well for me.
The candy room valued by itself at $200,000. it's a $70 million mansion. I mean, look at this mansion. It's gorgeous. It also, I mean, to be fair, it also has a wine cellar. Yeah. But here's the candy room.
Oh my!
Is that Tony Stark's house?
It's
yeah.
It has those nice bins stereo that you see in the candy stores.
Yeah,
filled with all different kinds of candy.
I've visited Google before. It kind of looks like that.
It's like Google.
And you got the M&M guys.
And knowing Notch, he didn't.
And those are actual chocolate M&Ms.
You can eat those M&Ms. Well, I know they're on wheels. What are they on wheels for? Is that
they're
so
Segways, I bet.
They can skate around. So this, I'm sorry, I overestimated. It was only a $70 million.
It's a steal at half the price.
Steal. The realtor, I guess I remembered this, said the house is worth $85 million all day long.
That's
the realtor.
Well, he stole it for 70.
There was an extra $10 million in candy.
He didn't have to pay any extra for Hero Brian in the basement.
No. Hero Brian was removed before he was allowed. You obviously have a young son who plays Minecraft, as do I.
Yes.
We know all about Hero Brian. Okay, what else? Let's see. Oh, Theranos. There's an interesting story. We began the year. Theranos was worth $4.5 billion, was well on its way to becoming a massive success under Elizabeth Holmes.
Changing the whole economic model of blood testing.
Without having to draw a vial of blood, just a single drop, they could do all the tests you'd need, except it turns out you couldn't.
Not so much.
Not so much. She had some of the biggest names on her board, but unfortunately none of them had any idea how biotech worked.
Or
including
doesn't.
Henry Kissinger and George Shultz, generals and so forth. Elizabeth Holmes apparently is now under investigation. And I think the sense I get is the whole thing's a fraud. It all broke out with a tipster who went to the Wall Street Journal in a series of Wall Street Journal articles this year.
The point being that Theranos also knew.
They knew, and for faking the test results.
Oh, but we'll get there. By the time they find out, like, we'll have already fixed this.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it was intentional fraud. It could very well have been self-deception, right? Oh, no, this will...
Wishful thinking, we call that.
Wasn't there that vegan product where they were buying their own product at the stores to create demand for the product, and then they were trying to...
Mayonnaise.
Yeah, the vegan mayonnaise.
Yeah, the vegan mayonnaise.
And but we'll get the sales. We just need a little bit of time. That's all we need.
Oh. It's called bootstrapping.
Yeah.
It was called Just Mayo, right? Just Mayo.
Yeah.
Not just as in just, only just as in justice mayo. Mm. Another fine mess you've got us into.
Creamy corn cob in IRC keeps bringing up the big DDoS attack.
We haven't mentioned that.
Yeah. Mm. And my question for Steve is, how are we still having DDoS attacks? How are people's computers still
light
getting
bulbs?
Yeah.
Light bulbs.
IoT.
Yeah.
Yes. our favorite slogan of this year Internet is the S in IoT stands for security.
So Dyn DNS, which is, I didn't realize this. I'd use Dyn DNS as dynamic DNS redirector. So
right.
If you don't have a static IP address, you want to have a server, you register it with Dyn DNS, and anytime you're
they're IP a major DNS provider.
It turns out they also provide DNS for some of the biggest companies on the internet, including Spotify and Twitter.
It's not a sexy service, as we know, and so it makes sense that major and Dyn DNS also has a huge infrastructure, so it makes sense that that is something that major cloud providers would outsource because it's just sort of like, oh, somebody else can do our DNS. There's no value to be added to it, and so they got attacked and created a massive outage that surprised people in its size.
Attacked by, it turned out, DVRs?
The Mirai botnet was millions of Internet of Things devices, DVRs and
cameras, right?
And webcams.
All made by a Chinese company called Xiangmai.
Right.
Which had sold them to other companies
for relabeling. Yep.
Xiangmai, of course, would make these devices and go, thanks, enjoy yourself, and never update it, never fix it.
Right.
In fact, these had hardwired passwords, which is what made it easy to hack them.
Yep.
Although, a couple of now, the upshot after all of this, Dyn DNS just sold to Oracle for many millions of dollars, so there must be money. And Xiangmai recalled all of its devices for updates, and I'm sure that every one of you watching who has a Xiaomi device,
how would you know?
Well, exactly, because it doesn't say that on the front.
Right,
it says Cox.
Yeah,
and if you remember, like through the whole beginning of the year, it's where is HomeKit? Why is Apple delaying it? Why are they being so mean to third-party accessory makers? Why are they insisting on secure Wi-Fi and encrypted communications? And it was a whole string of articles. And turns out security is important even on your IoT
devices. And this was something we spent a lot of time on Security Now this year this adds a whole new wrinkle. The problem is the manufacturers of the devices have demonstrated it doesn't matter to the consumer. The consumers have demonstrated they're oblivious.
Yep.
They want to be able to look at their driveway when they're 100 miles away from home. So they plug these little miracles in and, oh, look, I can do that now. So and we also know that convenience and security are at odds. Yes. And so the manufacturers want to make them easy to use, sacrificing security, which unfortunately it's only market pressure. I mean, for example, we were talking about Apple and Apple's demonstrated commitment to security. And this was one of the FBI's major points in attacking Apple, saying Apple has created this strong encryption as a marketing benefit. They're selling security. Well, so what we've seen is that Apple has worked hard to minimize the impact to the consumer of offering the security. It's much easier just not to worry about it. And the problem is when people screw electronic light bulbs and webcams in
door locks.
People who listen to Twit Network understand that there's more to it than that. But the consumer just buys them from Walmart and hooks them up and, oh, look.
Right. And what they don't realize is all it takes is one call by many devices to one server to constitute a DDoS attack. This whole discussion is reminding me of my favorite moment of television from 2016, which came from, I think it aired in 2016. I certainly watched it in 2016, which came from Mr. Robot. It was the first episode of season 2 when the hackers decide to take over Evil Corp General Counsel's home.
Yes.
Yes.
The lines are going crazy.
Yes. Because they want it. They want it as home base.
Right. So they drive her out.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's awesome.
I'll save it. Yeah. I like to binge watch my shows. I wait till
the sink backs up and the lights don't work and the stereo's
very
blasting
loud
and blaring.
Yes.
And
alarms
so
are
she,
on.
She's on the phone. Can you fix this? And they go, no. She says, okay, I'm going to a hotel.
Actually, TV is one of the stories this year. This was a very good year, not for the broadcast network much, but for Netflix and Amazon and HBO and television in general.
Yeah.
we saw really kind of a power shift.
Quality content, too.
Some people called it the platinum age of television.
And I don't like there are obviously issues we can talk about when it comes to net neutrality and, you know, what do they call it? Zero rating. Zero rating. But we saw in Canada, Bell Fiber now is IP-based. You get an Apple TV. In the U.S., DirecTV Now is IP-based. You get an Apple TV or another product to use it. Netflix started allowing downloads this week for the first time. And it really is what you say. Like, we took this. They were saying for years that we can't negotiate Microsoft and Apple and Google. Like, they were fighting Google TV. They were fighting Xbox. They were fighting Apple. And we said, well, just wait. Time is on our side.
Yeah.
And finally, the end of 2016,
it's happening.
The dominoes are falling.
AT&T announced in December its DirecTV Now, which is an over-the-top streaming service that is zero-rated. Yeah. It doesn't count against your AT&T bandwidth limits. Okay, so here's what's going to happen. The FCC has decided to stop all work until January 20th, and President Trump comes in and appoints new FCC commissioners. So immediately, net neutrality is under assault. This whole AT&T is effectively saying, I mean, it's very clear, we're not worried about zero rating anymore, which was considered by many to be against net neutrality. Very controversial. T-Mobile's been doing it like crazy. AT&T is blatantly, they're not even burying it, saying,
zero rating appeals to people because it sounds like they're not going to pay anything.
Customers love it.
But the opposite side of that is promoted content. So, like, they zero rate their network, and then they say, Netflix, you've got to pay us. And, at the end, we're paying.
You don't want AT&T and T-Mobile to pick the winners in television. You want, if somebody wants to do a twit coming up and wants to compete, and they can't because it counts against your bandwidth cap, and all the current incumbents don't have to worry about that. You don't want that, but it is very hard to explain that to consumers.
Absolutely, because they just think it's free, and then they don't realize that now Netflix costs twice as much and HBO costs twice as much because that's not zero rated.
Another blow, a new FCC will probably cause to this category is that it looked like we were getting very close to the FCC mandating opening up the set-top boxes, that cable companies would be required to let Apple and Google and other companies make set-top boxes. That, in other words, could break that monopoly, which is, and the FCC was moving in that direction, but now that's stopped completely.
And was it Pasadena who wanted to start taxing?
Now that's going to be something we're going to watch, right? It's not just Pasadena; a number of municipalities in the state of California. What's the story there? How can they tax Netflix?
My mother just told me about this the other day. I haven't looked at it too closely yet, but I have it in the rundown for Twill tomorrow.
I do a radio show in these areas, right? You live in these areas,
yeah.
The city councils are looking for money. And they have decided that they already have the right to tax Netflix because it's a utility. So they're proposing a not insignificant tax on your Netflix bill. We'll go from $10 to $12, and $2 will go in the. It's not just Pasadena.
Is the logic that it's a cable company?
Well, so they're losing money because people are switching away from cable, and they were taxing that, and they want that money.
That's what they're saying. But it's 40 cities in California thinking about this. It's not.
And isn't it illegal to tax the internet?
Well, that's what they're saying is this isn't an internet tax. It is illegal in the United States.
It's a utility tax. Yeah.
It is a utility tax.
Right.
And we don't even have to get permission to apply this. So there's a company called Muni Services that consults local government on taxes. There's a business.
Yeah.
Hey, did you know you could charge people for
Netflix?
Sorry,
my horns are on crooked. Let me fix those.
Glendale, Stockton, Santa Barbara, Pasadena, Sacramento, all considering this tax on Netflix.
You know, when we were earlier this year, there was the fights, or maybe it was late last year, but we've covered the peering agreement fights where there were problems with Netflix because so much bandwidth was going in one direction.
Remember that? Yeah.
And what we learned was that 3/4 of the internet traffic at night is Netflix. That's insane.
Not YouTube, not HBO.
Right.
3/4 of the entire traffic on the globe is like one service. It's like people. This is how people are consuming their video entertainment now.
Well, and it's not just Netflix. Pasadena wants to charge a 9.4% tax on Netflix, but they also want to charge it on other streaming services. So your cable bill, how many streaming services do you get? Your cable bill could go up a significant amount.
So you've got
and we're already seeing people complaining.
Whatever that might be.
Yeah,
right?
I guess your bill to Netflix.
Yeah.
But if you have Netflix and Showtime anywhere and HBO Now, and pretty soon, you know, you're talking 10, 15, 20 bucks going to the city. I suspect that's not going to be. I just think
upheld.
That
would be, I need to look more at the underpinnings of it, how they're, how, you know, what sort of legal footing they're on there, and see if it's proper.
Yeah, doesn't seem so, and there is in fact a law against internet taxation in the United States.
Right. Before we leave the issue of AT&T and zero rating and all that, it occurred to me just to mention that part of the solution to the problem is for more cellular carriers to do what AT&T is doing and offer
unlimited. Well, T-Mobile already does. Right?
Unlimited? Yeah.
Binge on.
Right. So once you have unlimited data that's capped at a high level, oh, maybe
so they want to meter you, they want to zero rate their services and meter you on everyone else.
First of all, AT&T does not offer unlimited service, but T-Mobile, which does, says they'll throttle you, I think, at 28 gigabytes. So it probably is something that people are going to pay attention to. If I start watching Netflix full time, and it's going to cost me and my bandwidth bill, I better watch AT&T.
Leo, you can watch our stuff for free, and that's what their message. Like they're asking, why are you trying to take something? Consumers want this. Why would you punish them?
Yeah. It starts to become an antitrust issue because the way you get your unlimited data with AT&T, is your DirecTV,
Universal. However,
T-Mobile doesn't own Spotify or Apple Music or any of these, so but they're still doing the same thing with those guys, and it has the same impact on new services. They don't have the advantages that these incumbent services have, and that's
we've had this
problem
for a long time. Like Rogers and Bell own the networks in Canada, so we've never had this sort of disparity. It's sort of becoming the same thing in the U.S.
Well, I was starting to worry at the beginning of the show that this was a terrible year.
We'd have nothing to talk about.
We did lose Bowie. We lost quite a few.
No, I figured it out, Leo. We didn't lose them. They fled. They saw what was happening.
Saw what was coming.
Yeah, they took advantage.
We lost Shepherd Book.
Shepherd Book, sad to say.
Signal.
Ron.
Ron Glass.
Glass, that's right. From Barney Miller and, of course, Firefly.
Yeah.
We lost so many people this
Cohen,
year.
Leonard Cohen.
Leonard Cohen. But, so that was sad. The security story is kind of sad. We don't know what's going to happen with the FCC and net neutrality. But then there's always Pokemon Go virtual reality.
That's right.
Plenty of shiny stuff. The new iPhone.
Yeah.
The new Google
Surface
phone.
Studio.
And the new Surface Studio. And I think we could wrap things up by just asking you guys what you think next year is going to bring. What will be the? What do you think the stories will be covering on Security Now?
Boy, I think we're going to see an increase of IoT issues. My theory is that we're going to see a separation in the market. I think Apple and Google are going to expand their focus, and they'll be the higher priced security focused solution. And then people who don't want to pay for security will still be able to buy, you know, Xiaomi or
cheap Android phones.
Exactly.
And we're seeing that, aren't we? That the cheap Android phones are huge security risks and not being patched.
Right. And so, for example, if you want Android and you can afford a Pixel, that's going to be a phone that Google will fix immediately. Right. We just covered a couple of weeks ago there was at one of the hacking contests, it took 90 seconds to take over a brand new Pixel.
But
it only took 24 hours for that to get patched. Right. And so, you know, what we're learning is security is porous, and so it's impossible, arguably, with the complexity that we have today, with the complexity that is that users want, to actually create bulletproof security. Given that, what then matters is that the companies understand that and arrange, as Google just demonstrated, that when a problem is found, and they will exist, that they get fixed quickly. That's the best we can ask for. So I think we're on a continuum, and it's going to be a great ride in 2017.
What do you think, Denise Howell, on This Week in Law? What are your stories for 2017 going to look like?
I hope that we're going to see the fake news problem solved by a number of means. Watching this all unfold has reminded me that back in the early 2000s, the bloggers had sort of dubbed themselves the truth police.
And you were an early blogger.
Yeah, they were going to fact check your a double.
They were the future of journalism.
Well, I don't know if they were the future of journalism, but what you sort of saw was a dissatisfaction with the completeness and context that mainstream news sources were providing for people, which I think has led to things like the Twit Network. You know, people giving
we're all context all the time,
right? Exactly, which is great. So I think that we saw this progression from there's not enough to now everyone can have a voice and we can have lots of really good voices, but there is this problem where there is a bunch of trash out there too. And you know, how are we going to take out the trash? I hope that it will be attacked in the same way that people jumped into it in the early 2000s and say, we're just not going to let this slide. This shall not pass.
That saddens me a little bit too, because we had such hopes for the democratizing effects of the internet, that everybody would get a voice. But it turns out that, yeah, everybody got a voice, and some small percentage of humans are so horrific that giving them a voice would turn out to be a very bad idea. The problem is we can't agree on what percentage is the bad percentage. You know, we know it's 2%, but we don't know.
But then you get the lowest common denominator across the board.
Well, I also think we talked about this on a Twig a couple of weeks ago. The other thing that happened, we saw this coming. I saw this coming, but I didn't realize what the impact would be, is facts were at a much higher value pre-internet, right? If you wanted to know something, you had to work to get it. If you were lucky, you had an encyclopedia. If you weren't, you had to go to the library. But the possession of a fact was a valuable thing. The internet commoditized facts. It made facts so commonplace, it eliminated their value. And as a result, it eliminated the word, it devalued the word fact. So what is a fact and what isn't a fact is no longer meaningless. And I didn't expect that. I thought that with the plentitude of facts, we would all have the opportunity to be smarter, to make better decisions. You know, a perfect kind of microcosm of this is the internet review. I thought, well, you know, with everybody reviewing stuff on Amazon and Yelp, we'll all have perfect information. We'll always get the best price and the get best product. But it got junked up so quickly that we can no longer trust internet reviews. And well, I think the same thing's happened with truth.
Moral relativism has now become factual relativism.
Exactly. There is no, it seems as if, at least in some circumstances, there is no such thing as a true
People in positions of power have said on television that they don't care about facts, they care about feelings. Right. Right. And that, I think that plays out. Like we've seen, and that's just not politics, that's electronics too. We have seen things happen this year that previously CEOs would make one mistake and they were out. Like one mistake was
not
unforgivable.
Anymore.
Now you can screw up every day and nobody.
Failure's good,
well,
baby.
The Tylenol recall, I mean, Tylenol had to go to extraordinary lengths to save their brand.
That's right.
We did a survey in Android Central and people are like, I would still have a Galaxy Note 7 today if I could.
That was another big story we missed. The Note 7 story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
God knows we spent a lot of time on that this year.
Well, and we've also seen in terms of like what the internet has become, it is unfortunately also a big marketing machine. And I think it was early this year that ad blockers were a big deal. You know,
thanks to Apple. This was the year that Apple turned on ad blocking.
Yes, iOS allowed that to happen, and suddenly it went mainstream.
Very good point.
And so this is consumers with technology pushing back against the fact that websites were just jumping around, and I mean they were comic books.
Punch the monkey.
It's like hard to focus on.
But that gives us hope that Denise, that your hope is possible. We were with ad blockers able to kind of rebalance the equation. Maybe we can with technology rebalance the fact equation.
I think so, and I think you know the more people look at things like onerous terms of service, too. I mean, this comes up all the time on This Week in Law. Reviews aren't completely worthwhile or not worthwhile. You still can get a good feel for...
You have to learn how to use them.
Yeah, you have to learn how to use them. You have to learn how to use terms of service. You have to learn how to use noobs, I guess.
And that's what I've been saying all along is that, well, once facts are plentiful, now critical thinking becomes the coin of the realm. Except that it's kind of hard when you're inundated with so many facts, and it's so difficult to find out
You have to teach internet literacy the way we used to teach media literacy.
Well, we clearly have to do that.
Yeah,
we clearly have to do that. Yeah, Renee, what do you think we'll be covering on MacBreak Weekly, and you'll be covering on iMore in 2017?
I think this is, according to rumors, this is the year Apple starts deleting bezels.
It'll be a bezel-less year.
I don't think bezel-less, but I think the ratio of screen to device. Right.
You hold your pad from the underneath.
It's got a handle on the back, right?
You know, this was towards the end of the year, there really started to be this feeling that Apple has lost its way. You think Apple hasn't lost its way? And in fact, in 2017, we'll see a reinvigorated Apple innovate as they used to.
I think we have way more access to information than we used to. Like, for example, if we'd had what we have now when they were making the iPhone, like Apple is working on a secret tablet project. Tablet project canceled. Apple now working on phone. You know, employees stuck in pizza-smelling office building, not allowed vacation time. Like, it would have been a mess. But now we see all that unfolding in real time in front of us. Right. So the perception is skewed.
Well, the Apple Car project is a perfect example. A project Apple never announced, never talked about.
No.
We spent hours talking about it, and then hours talking about how it had gone away.
Yes. Looking at the buildings where they were leasing
in order
to do the cars.
We literally could have done that with the Purple project, which became the iPhone, and it would have been, are we going to use, they were going to use Safari's interface. No, they're not anymore. Right. They're not using WebKit. They're using, they're creating UI. What is this UIKit thing? I mean, like, it would have been.
Kind of back to that fact story. We know too much now.
Yes. No, we totally
we're
do.
We're inundated with this.
And I think we'll one of the biggest questions we have going into next year is that Apple has been hugely constrained on the Mac side by Intel and to some degree AMD, because they just, as much as people want Kaby Lake, those chips still haven't shipped.
Right.
So Apple can't use them. The desktop chips, they don't make them for the smaller iMac anymore. And, you know, Apple controls their own destiny on iOS. What's going to happen with the Mac and their increased dependency on companies? And Steve and I were talking about this earlier. The chips aren't evolving as fast anymore. So what's that going to be? But I think spring we'll start to see the iPads and the Mac desktops, and we'll be happier.
Well, one thing I know is we will be here with Rene Ritchie for Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday with This Week in Law, and Denise Howell every Friday with Steve Gibson, and Security Now every Tuesday and all week long, and every Sunday, of course, for This Week in Tech. I hope you had a great holiday, and I hope you'll be back January 2nd. We'll have all new shows for you. And a lot of great excitement. This week will be best ofs all week long. We've collated some of the best segments from this year's shows. And these are always fun. I always look forward to these. You're going to do something that we did a couple of years ago. You're going to bring back the portable dog killer, Steve.
Well, it's a fan favorite of all time. Back on Security Now, on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the invention of the laser, I used that opportunity. I thought, okay, I have a little story that very few people have heard before, and we have a lot of new listeners to the podcast since the last time we shared that.
We do,
and so I thought, for some people, no one has ever heard you laugh as hard. I mean,
it was pretty funny.
I don't know if you were on your ball then, or how you didn't manage to fall off, you didn't know where I was going with this because you didn't know the story either. So it was a lot of fun, and so that's what we're going to do for this season's.
Nice.
Holiday on Security Now.
Denise, are you doing a best of for This Week in Law? What are you
doing? I think that we are. We've been asked to submit some clips.
Good.
So.
I love that show, and I look forward to that. Mm-hmm. And Renee, I can tell you the Mac Break Weekly, you'll have a best of as well. So you get the week off, awesome. And we'll see everybody in the new year. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you for your support, your patronage, your queries, your comments, your criticisms all year long. It's been a great year, and we really appreciate your help making Twit what it is. We wouldn't be able to do this without your support. So thank you. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season. And we'll see you all in 2017. I can't believe it's 2017.
I know. We're so old.
This is the future. Where's my flying cars? Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit and another year is in the can.
Amazing.
Bye-bye.
Bye.